Welcome to Dear Future, I'm ready. This is 21 for 21 with Nora Bateson.
Dear Future, I am ready for the very, very strange, the super weird, the kinky, the unexpected, the details that don't make sense, the things that happen in peripheral vision that do not land. The things I have no words for, the ways that I have never been before, the me I have never met yet.
Nora Bateson is an award-winning filmmaker, research designer, writer, and educator, as well as president of the International Bateson Institute based in Sweden. Her work asks the question, how can we improve our perception of the complexity we live within so that we can improve our interaction with the world? An international lecturer, researcher, and writer, Nora wrote, directed, and produced the award-winning documentary An Ecology of Mind, a portrait of her father, Gregory Bateson. Her work brings the fields of biology, cognition, art, anthropology, psychology, and information technology together into a study of the patterns in ecology of living systems. Her book, Small Arcs of Larger Circles, is a revolutionary personal approach to the study of systems and complexity. Nora has also coined the term warm data and initiated the Warm Data Labs as an exploration of trans-contextual information.
This is Dear Future, I'm Ready, a podcast brought to you from Amsterdam by Digital Society School and Transformational Studio. Your hosts for today are Carola Vashore and Marco van Hout.
21 for 21 is a podcast about transformation. This is happening right now, and it is complex, which is why we are talking to 21 transformational leaders, people who are ahead of the curve and to whom we can ask, hey, what's the view like from out there? We want to ask them to inspire us in our transformational journeys. Today, we are talking to Nora Bateson about systems, complexity, and the importance of transcontextual perception. It is such an honor and a big, big pleasure to have you with us, Nora. Welcome.
Thank you, Nora. It's great to be here.
All right. So let's dive right in. And we're going to start, of course, by looking at what's happening around us in some kind of maybe naive hope of trying to understand what's going on. We're in a context in which there are all of these paradigmatic shifts taking place. Systems are collapsing, structures are collapsing, ways of doing are begging us to be revised and changed and renewed. There is a need for new things to emerge, while at the same time, with all of this sort of creative renaissance, there is also a lot of creative destruction taking place. We've both read a lot of your work. We've listened to a lot of your most recent podcasts, and we've heard you say it's going to hurt. And this worries us, but at the same time also kind of triggers our creative spirit and our ingenuity to try and find new ways to make a better, kinder, and brighter future possible. What's your take on what's happening out there today?
Out there, in there, over here, under there. The truth is it's everywhere. And that's what makes it tricky is that there's all this change taking place, even within our own bodies, with the shiftings of our own microbiomes in response to the different kinds of ecologies and foods and emotions and you know, all kinds of things, the virus and so on. So where's the change and what is transformation, right? So one of the things that I think we have to be really careful of with the idea of transformation and is that, you know, David Christian Wall is always quoting me on this because I said it once in a lecture and he was like, yeah, that's the issue. It's like, we're not actually trying to put wings on caterpillars, right? If you talk about transformation, you got to recognize that caterpillar is gone. And so, you know, one of the things that's always been true about, you know, transformational seminars and this and that, and, you know, the whole like systems change, systems transformation, trendy rhetoric, is that essentially there's an underlying understanding that what we're going to do is we're going to change some necessary bits so that we can actually keep living the way we're living. And that is not what we're doing. And the way in which those changes are taking place are much more subtle. The structures are changing, but deeper than that, there are these underlying processes. And one of them, I think, is memory. So I think one of the most significant ways to kind of recognize transformation happening is when you look at you or you notice that your own memories read differently. Let me give you an example. So when I was I might have been 19. I was one of those kids who was, you know, I didn't have a lot of money. I was in university. I was waiting tables. I was, you know, and I saved up and I went with a backpack and a friend. And just yesterday, I was thinking about that trip. And I started to cringe. I noticed something very different about that trip than I ever thought about before. For me, that trip had always been an adventure, an exploration of other cultures and other worlds. And I, in fact, went to school in Thailand and studied Thai. So I did take part in this in another way. But on that trip, let me just be perfectly frank. I was there on an exploration for me. I exploited the cheap labor, cheap hotel rooms, cheap travel, cheap beach experience. And when I look at that now, I actually feel really differently about it. I'm suddenly looking at those aspects of my life that I used to see in a very different light and thinking, ooh, I'm sorry. And that's really important. That's where the transformation happens. I just wanted to kind of point that out in a very specific detail, because it's all too easy to think, oh, we just need to, you know, restructure the economy. And if we restructure the economy, then everybody's going to, you know, live in a different way and so on and so forth.
I really like the way that you just referred to noticing. You said transformation starts taking place when you start noticing that something's off, that the way that you looked at things or understood things or perceived things or held on to things previously needs a bit of revision, or as we say in design, needs to be reframed.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So tell us about noticing and about perception. We've talked about that when we introduced you about the importance of transcontextual perception. What is this?
This is what my work is all about. So it's looking at, you know, complexity and systemic processes, but recognizing that every living organism is actually partaking in multiple contextual relational processes. What do I mean? Okay, I'm a mom. I'm 400 trillion organisms. I'm a filmmaker. I'm my generation. I am my culture, my language, my. I'm a spouse. I'm a best friend. I'm a professional in this circumstance. But in each one of those relationships, there are very different patterns of communication, very different processes of learning and mutual learning taking place. So there's multiple contexts. If you look at a meadow, okay, where's the meadow? Well, the meadow is necessarily, you know, requiring the earthworms, and it's requiring the plants and the butterflies too, and the bees and the trees and the roots and each one of these organisms is in a very different multiple contextual communication process with the other organisms. The way that an earthworm is in communication with a tree is different than how it is in communication with the soil bacteria and what it eats. It's different than how it's in communication and relationship with maybe, you know, my son when he's getting ready to go fishing, right? What's an earthworm? Well, it depends on where you look. So I'm interested in how these multiple contexts come together, because whatever it is that you're looking at, it's never just that and nothing more. All right. So we're looking at, you know, this question of what was that trip to Thailand? Okay. Well, yeah. In the moment, it was part of a cultural thing. But as I look back, what I'm starting to see is that You know, and I'm being very honest here. That trip to Thailand is pretty much a signature of almost everything that's wrong with the world. And I did that. And in, not only did I did it thinking that I was learning and exploring and becoming a bigger person, and that this was, you know, what? Yeah. Like, ooh.
You even thought you were becoming worldly. Yeah. You were doing the exact opposite. Yeah.
Yeah.
And actually what I was doing was, you know, participating in some really old and really ugly cultural patterns.
Yeah.
But I didn't know. Right. So mm-hmm. transcontextual perception is that thing of being able to say, you know, whatever it is you're doing, it actually has lots of contextual, you know, meaning and consequences.
Right.
Certainly. Yes, absolutely. Consequences. Yeah. Yes. And impact. And because, of course, to the point that you've just brought up, communication is so important. When we are able to communicate, the other person can show us their vantage point, even of ourselves. And when we communicate towards the inside, we also can learn of a different vantage point within ourselves, that you really have to move in all of these multiple directions in order to perceive. But I think we've made it really difficult on ourselves, definitely from a Western culture perspective, because we've accepted that there were certain rules and certain ways of doing things.
What's the role of education in that? There's perhaps a difference between education, and you mentioned learning a lot. What in your perception is the difference? And what Carola just described, how does that fit in to that difference?
I mean, I think education has very little to do with learning, frankly.
Yeah, exactly.
Other than that, what we're learning to do is learning to be in the world that is moving through these patterns of devitalizing and exploitation. Basically education teaches us to think about things in compartments.
Yeah.
And it teaches us, you know, when you're sitting in a math class, you're sort of learning math, but mostly you're learning about what it is to be in a culture in which sitting in a math class is important. Mm-hmm. The meta messages of sitting in math class are much stronger than what you learned in math. I mean, I don't know how much algebra you remember, but, but what you do remember probably more viscerally is your relationship with the teacher, how to be a good student, how to be a bad student, how to be the funny kid, how to be liked, who to sit next to, who not to sit next to, what it felt like to be judged by the other kids. What is your relationship with authority? How does that relate to bosses and parents? And what were you learning about, you know, this program is about the future. Okay. You're sitting in math class. What is this, the whole meta messaging of sitting in that stupid class, learning about, you know, actually, you know, the quadratic formula is pretty fantastic piece of history, but they're not talking about history. They're talking about your future. If you're going to succeed, if you're going to be relevant in the world you live in, you need to get this number of a grade on the next test. You have to get into university. You have to go get a job. You have to make a right. And you're like inside this industrial model. And even at the level of identity of our own selves, we have industrialized the notion of self. Yeah. Okay. So that's a really different thing than recognizing that there's mutual learning going on. Right. And when you start to look at that, what you're looking at is how is it actually that in that math class, that grouping of people are mutually learning how to be in a world that is inherently devitalizing and exploitative.
How do we help people, or even how do I help ourselves to learn to free ourselves from those programs and rules and disassociate, for example, education and learning, so that we may move more into a space of learning, which necessarily embraces diversity of opinion, of thoughts, of presence, of everything. How do we do that? How do you transform while the world keeps spinning?
Mm-hmm.
You have part of the answer with your Warm Data Labs. I Yeah. Hope.
I mean, this is what the Worm Data Labs are all about. And it's very subtle because the places in which those deep patternings, those deep expectations, those ways of learning to be in our world. You know, I didn't go to school to learn to be racist. I didn't take a how to be a racist class. But the nuances of how to be a white woman were implicit everywhere. In the way I got on buses, the way I walked down streets, the way I purchased groceries, the way I went, sat in a classroom, the way I entered a grocery, it was everywhere. Right. So now it's like I can recognize that this deep experience of life is fused into my survival. Okay, this is the problem, is that right now the destruction and the extinction is fused into our survival. They're totally connected. They're inextricably they're latched and intersteeped and locked together in total interdependency. This is a complete double bind. In order to survive, we have to take part in the systems that are destroying each other and the planet. It's a total double bind. And so, you know, we can't let go because we die. But if we don't let go, we die. Right? And so where does that change happen? How can we begin to perceive differently? And I think one of the worst, most pernicious illusions out there is that you are an agent of change and you can make a change.
Yeah.
And if you look at that thinking, it is absolutely imbued with all the mechanistic industrialized metaphors that are actually creating the problem. Yeah. You are not a change agent. You can't make change. You are the system. You are the culture. You are that, you know, that snow fox that blends completely into the tundra.
This is
so
fascinating.
Where's the free will? How do you actually do this? And this is where the Worm Data comes in. Because what we're doing is we're actually re-layering and repiling, like the moiré phenomenon, different contextual memories and stories and voices, so that they start to loosen each other up, so that the impressions start to loosen up other impressions way below the level of language. And that what we're starting to see is that probably the best you and I will ever have is attention. It's that thing I was saying earlier, noticing, whoops, I didn't see this before. I can see this now. And in that moment of perception, there went a whole future of, you know, getting my kids backpacking in Thailand. There went a whole, you know, a whole sort of way of framing my own youth as this sort of, you know, nostalgia of my adventures. There went a whole bunch of action that could have been built upon that scaffolding, gone. Now, did I make a change? Was there a change made? There was a change in perception. Mm-hmm. And when that change of perception happened, the action is all changed.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
Can I relate this to an example? I think this perception is super important. And what is the role of togetherness in that? So, for example, Digital Society School, we started with the United Nations Development Program, this global hackathon 5 years ago around the global goals, the sustainable goals for development. What we tried is indeed to get people together to work on those goals, to start understanding the problems that lie underneath them much better. And what we noticed is that everybody was focused on the solutions, only wanted to solve these small pieces of the goals. And we started noticing already in the second year that it was much more about the community, about the togetherness of people that had that kind of epiphany, that had that kind of perception change, and perhaps You know, this. I know you hate the term changing mindsets, but perhaps you can respond to the need of people in those kind of activities. Even though they are together, they're learning together, they still want to, you know, work on things. The focus is mostly on, making that change.
What you're discussing, what you're talking about here, is the fact of the way that I perceive the world and the way that I am in the world is not just about me. You know, people like to say the change begins within. Mm. Yeah, you can say all you want that the change begins within, but the change, I would say, actually begins in between.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The change is in our relational process and how we see each other within this moment and moving together into, you know, you talked about a transformational time. What I see right now is that it's like that experience of being at the beach and you're in the wave and you thought you were going to body surf, but the wave caught you sideways and now you're just tumbling. And you don't know how long you're going to tumble. You don't know if you're going to bump your head on the bottom of the seafloor. You don't know which way is up or down. You've got sand up your nose, down your bathing suit, and your ears are full of water. You can't see. You can't hear. You don't know where you are. You're dizzy. You're upside down. And that's where we're going. So the real question is, how do we be with each other, you know? Have you ever had a friend come to dinner that you've known and loved for a long time and suddenly they're a vegan?
Yeah,
and you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to make for you. I guess you're sitting at the table. Everything is really like, right? And and you don't know where to be in relationship because there's been a deep change. And all the things that were before aren't anymore, but you still love them. You still have memories with them. You still want to share a meal with them. You still want to host them. But there's all this like awkward thing. And, you know, I think increasingly one of the things that's going to, we're all going to be dealing with is how to be in relationship with each other when we're all changing. And in some ways, the pandemic's been this great experience of that because everybody went in their little cubbyhole for lockdown and we all changed. We've all been through a lot this year, but we didn't go through it in relationship. So now you start to see your friends again and it's like, well, I changed and you changed and we don't know how each other changed. It's like when you went on a trip and you came back and you learned things and you tried to tell your friends about your trip, but they didn't understand because they weren't there. Mm. Only this time we all went on a different trip. And no one really knows where they are anymore. And so, you know, there's a lot of mental illness. There's a lot of loneliness. It is not even remotely like we're going to go into transformation times together with everybody nice and sane and thriving.
All of these phenomena you describe lead us to new questions. And I think that, as you said, noticing and really trying to think in terms of transformation requires asking these new questions, very much in agreement with the fact that assuming or even presuming that the change comes from within and that as individuals we have any kind of power to be the drivers of that change is leading to anxiety, to burnout, to mental illness of very, very complicated degrees. Very much in agreement with the fact that we have to learn how to be in relationship, not relating, and that I think that's where the transformational change really comes, not relating it to time and space, but relating it to interbeing, relating it to the absolute blending of the fogs in the tundra, as you said. How can we be together in acceptance of one another's evolutionary process and the fact that while we are all changing, we are changing at different speeds and in different ways?
What's in there? Okay, so what I like to think about is mutual learning, transcontextual mutual learning, how we're learning at the, you know, all of us are learning at the same time to be in the world that we are. Okay, you learn when you're a little kid how to sit in a classroom, how to fill out a form, right? And that learning helps you then. That is a a learning that you can then use when you go in another context. When you go to the doctor, you're going to fill out a form. You're going to, you know, start to create this identity of understanding how the doctor, that you go in a bank. And again, you're going to have that same set of like, this is how I am in the world. This is how I do this world thing. And so what we have done is we're wound together in this. And so there's a real difference between mutual learning being we're learning the same thing and we're learning at the same time. And the way that I learned to fill out those forms and go into those offices, okay, is really different than the way my friends that have different skin color have learned. Right? There's a very different way. The way that I learned to get in my car and go someplace is really different than the way, you know, a young Black man in San Francisco would learn to get in his car and go somewhere. Really different. So we're mutually learning how to be in the contexts of our world. But the learning is not the same. And this is where I think a lot of the change maker stuff gets really weird, mm-hmm. because it turns into these kind of blanket prescriptives of we have to be collaborative, we have to care, we have to we. And that notioning is actually totally weird. And it's very much like colonialism.
Yes.
We have to come up with a solution that we are going to implement everywhere and cookie cutter stamp, And as we do that, what we're going to do is save the world because we are the privileged people who will save the world. Okay. Like, wow. Mm. Take a look at the mechanistic thinking. Take a look at the colonial thinking. Take a look at the industrialization that's going on there. Take a look at the loss. Okay, the loss of rich, weird vitality of life and relationship. And that's where the change is. It's in the rich, weird vitality of relationship. Right. Oh. It's not in these bizarre blanket prescriptives, no matter how positive they sound. I get irritated with this sort of discussion of we're going to have to all collaborate. It's like, okay, well, what do you mean by collaborate?
Yeah.
And usually by collaborate, what people mean is you're going to do your thing and I'm going to do my thing and they're going to do their thing. And we're going to operate like a big functional machine together. And this is very different from something like improvisation, where you come in together, you bring your history, but you go into a place you've never been before.
Right.
And you show up in relationship, and how I'm able to be in relationship and who I am when I'm with you is really different than who I am when I'm with someone else. Who I could be, what I could give, what I could think about, what I could feel, what I could experience. Totally different with different people.
But
so who am I?
Nora, in that improvisation, there is a lot of communication happening as well. So there's no collaboration perhaps, but communication is key also between cultures. But what is the mutual language then? What is the mutual language that we need to focus on so that it does connect us in that sense?
Nope.
There is none.
Nope. Let it go. I mean, what there is stories, mm-hmm. and art and poetry, and what there is experience. And if you think of each person as a teapot of experiences and complexities and weirdnesses, And then you think, okay, so I'm going to say this thing, like I'm in this podcast saying this stuff. And it's so weird because I have no idea what teapots these words are going to land in. Mm. I have no idea. And so I can't actually calibrate. I can't be in response. You know, there's probably somebody in a, you know, driving in their car somewhere or running along a path in the woods thinking, she's so full of it. It is about the change within. I can be the change maker, right? And to that person, I would say, of course you can. Of course it is, right? But within a different set of ways of communicating that, I might be able to express it to them in another way. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, this is where Harari, you know, the guy that wrote Sapiens, yes. he has this great thing about free will. And he says, you know, if you think you have free will, then you're a fool. You have none. Yeah. Because the context around you provide the things you're choosing from. And you know, you think, okay, am I gonna choose to be an improvisational actor, or am I gonna choose to be a programmer, or am I gonna choose to be a gardener? Well, where did those choices come from? Did you produce those choices?
Right.
You know, are you actually, is that actually free will?
Free choice.
But the second you realize you don't have free will, like, you know, the language I'm speaking right now is English. And, you know, I could be putting together words from all different languages, like the heretic and the name of the rose, one of my favorite characters, but then it would be incoherent.
So what appears there just in that realization are two things. First, our ability to discern, and where we relationally support one another is introducing different things that stand out. And you're like, oh, wait, I can discern. I can see things. I can interpret things. I can perceive. I can smell. I can hear things differently. And the second is about being deliberate in our actions, understanding that because others have effect on us, we might also have a ripple effect or some kind of effect on the other, and therefore being deliberate in what we're throwing back in. And I think that that sounds very rational, the way I'm wording it. And I think it's a much more intuitive process, especially when we come into a space of being, of really sort of being in our bodies and being present. Then that exchange, that togetherness that Marco referred to, starts becoming part of the unspoken, but however explicit dynamic of how we interact and interrelate. If you don't do it deliberately, if you don't do it through discernment, then it's still happening, but it might come back and bite you in the butt.
And so it's there again, you get this transcontextual information. There's so much different kinds of different of ways in which there's communication taking place, and that we are communicating. And we, you know, easy to say, oh, we're all interconnected and the world is made of relationships and everybody's interdependent. And it's another thing altogether to go deeply into that and to, you know, be a student of the interrelational, interseeping, interways of learning together. And that is, it's rigorous. It's super rigorous. And, it's also beautiful. So you know, I absolutely think that the times that we're going into right now are going to hurt and they're going to be confusing. But there's also the possibility of a fantastic beauty, a beauty unlike anything we would know now as beauty. Right. So I get nervous about this, you know, kind of how can we make the world beautiful together? Is the wrong question. If you want a beautiful world, you don't start there. If you want a beautiful world, you start immediately in with what kinds of communication and tones and ways of being together. And if those are beautiful, they beget more beauty in the world. They beget. So caring is not like some abstracting thing. It's something that is in the nuance, not just of my actions, but of the ways that my cheeks turn pink, or that I get tears in my eyes, or that, right, or that I stay up late at night worrying about how to care, about how to tend something that I don't understand. And so that those processes are actually going to go so far beyond the first order of solutions. They're going to go deeply into relationships that then produce other relationships, that produce other relationships. And so the whole thing about the mechanistic fix it is that you're fixing something broken.
Yeah.
But the broken thing isn't the broken thing. The broken thing is an expression of a transcontextual relational processing and mutual learning that is producing this thing that is devitalizing. So how to then be in relationships in such a way that that relationship allows the other relationships and the other relationships beyond that to have and produce vitality.
Thank you.
Super important message for all of us designers out there, because we're always trying to fix things. And that's so much embedded in our minds that it's hard to get out.
Yeah. And to your question, how do we perceive your words, your message, your communication? We are also seeing you as you speak, thanks to digital technologies. Personally, thank you. You have spoken to my heart with these words. So I could feel the uplift of really a very emotional sense. Obviously, I'm Latin American, disclaimer there, but very...
Don't start crying now, Carola.
A very uplifting sense of, wow, yes, let's build towards that. Let's build to something that allows the continuity and the thriving of those relationships. Mm-hmm. So to close... we'd like to ask you, you can read it behind us, dear future, I'm ready, to complete the sentence. Dear future, I am ready.
Dear future, I am ready for the very, very strange, the super weird, the kinky, the unexpected, the details that don't make sense, the things that happen in peripheral vision that do not land. The things I have no words for, the ways that I have never been before, the me I have never met yet.
Wow, very poetic.
Woo-hoo!
Ending.
We're definitely thank you, ready for that, Nora. Yeah. Thank you so much. It's been super inspiring you having you on our podcast. So thanks so much.
Yeah, we can make like 5 episodes, I think, with Nora.
Most assuredly.
Well, it's great to be here. Thank you so much. And good luck with your project. And
we know that you're on the rollout of the Warm Data Labs and that you've done several. How is that going to continue to evolve? Do you know? Does it have some
form? Oh my gosh, this whole Warm Data world is so incredible. The community that is, my fear was that that the Warm Data Lab process was going to turn into a tool and it was going to be like World Cafe or, you know, Agile or something. And it was going to get McKinsey'd and it was going to get turned into how to fix, you know, organizations and find solutions.
Uh-oh.
And so that, of course, was the last thing I ever wanted to see happen, because this process and what's underneath it is actually based in life. It's really another thing. It's really another thing. And the rigor and the history and the deep theoretical underpinnings of it are, I mean, they're beautiful. And they're my history. They're my grandfathers and my fathers and, you know, and you know, ancient cultures from all over the world. And so I don't want to see this turned into some sort of, you know,
right,
conference tool for capitalism. No. Like, no, I don't want that. And I was afraid it was going to happen, and it didn't happen. And now we have 600 people who've been through the course, and they are, you know, engaging in reading salons, and they are taking part in all kinds of community work. And we're just starting a huge project that's about the 10,000 communities. And it is like, all I can tell you is that there is a wildfire in Warm Data right now.
Oh.
Let's warm our hands there as well, that fire.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And people are realizing, right? The world is not, it's not a code to be hacked. It's not a formula to be gotten. It's not a puzzle to be fit, you know, produced. Like this is a dance that you enter. It's a love affair that you partake in. It's a, you know, it's a garden that you have to be in the soil and change the pH of the soil if you want to see something else grow. Mm-hmm. You can't just start off with a new garden strategy.
Yeah.
I mean, the communities that I work with that are the most betrayed around the world. So we work in refugee camps. We work in, you know, all over the world in different kinds of communities, including very affluent communities and, you know, parliaments and so on. There is not one doubt in my mind where the change is. I mean, the people who are in the worst conditions have an embodied understanding of the complexity and the transcontextual issues and the double binds quicker than anyone at the top. Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for your time. We're 1 minute to 11 o'clock.
Dear Future.
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 Dear Future, I'm ready.
This is Dear Future, I'm ready.
Dear Future, I'm ready.
Thank you for listening to Dear Future, I'm ready. Curious about our next or previous episodes? Please find us on digitalsocietyschool.org or on your favorite podcast or music platform under Dear Future, I'm Ready, and subscribe today. Are you or your team interested in really getting hands-on with the practice of transformation design, sustainability by design, or diversity and inclusion? Check out our professional courses on digitalsocietyschool.org and sign up today for one of our truly transformational learning experiences. For help at an organizational level, check out Transformational Studio, a transformation design agency with the aim of revolutionizing change through design and making transformation irresistible. Check them out at transformation.studio.